Welcome back to the Explicit Measures podcast with Tommy, Seth, and Mike. Good morning, everyone. Welcome back.
Good morning.
Let's give you kind of a quick roundout of our main topic today. Today, our topic is an article made by probably one of our favorite external tools. This is high on my list. Made by Tabular Editor, written by Kurt Bueller. I mean, I think everything we're talking about now is written by Kurt these days. I don't think we're talking about anything else that Kurt doesn't write. And he's a busy...
He struck a chord
with us. So Kurt has written another article around gathering requirements for semantic models, talking about that. So that'll be our main topic for today. I think it's very relevant, especially when you're a business user and you're trying to move into more of a data modeler role or experience. These are important to understand what's going on here. So I like this is going to be a good article. Looking forward to talking through that. But first, let's go through some news. Tommy, do you have any news articles? Anything across the internet that you found was interesting?
So Gil, I can never say his last name, but Formu actually just came out earlier today. And he basically went through this process of trying to compare Dataflow's Gen 2 versus notebooks on cost and usability.
Yes.
And yeah, something we've talked about a lot. And basically looking at the F2 capacity in Australia.
Nice.
Basically loaded in the same data set. Was looking at both, again, like the ease of use of what his transformation is trying to do and everything else out. So
this is a good question. I mean, let's just talk about like that topic in general. This is a great question now, because previously on older versions of PowerBI.com, we didn't have multiple ways to move the same data around. We only had data flows. It was one option. You could use a data flow, or you could use the semantic model Power Query to load a table. This is a whole new world for us because we have Dataflow's Gen 2, and we can place data in our lakehouse, and we can use pipelines, and we can use notebooks. All of these things can write data to the same location. So this is very interesting. This is good because I want to be able to see, like, comparatively, how much does it cost me? What is the impact of doing the same amount of data crunching? This is great. I like this. Okay, cool. Sorry. I didn't mean to ask. I want to get some context there.
Yeah. I'm sure the jury's still out, but just looking at the cost of doing the cost per calculation, what she was basically saying was 42 cents an hour for the fabric capacity, for how much time it took them. We'll say it was the index arranged about 0.98 per second, I believe that was. So about almost a penny a second. So then he was talking about bursting costs. That was an additional side for OneNotes that wasn't part of just the normal, like when you're looking in the usage, it's not just that one thing. So then there's bursting capacities. So compared to data flows.
Because at the end of the day, you have to get down to like, what is the cost of a compute unit? I mean, I think that's really what we're talking about here. Because, you know, Microsoft changed things. Previously, we were doing things in virtual cores. It was like V cores. How many V cores are you using to run the process? Well, now it's all bundled together in one big, you know, network and internet connectivity and compute and storage. Like, there's a lot of other things that are happening because you're spinning up a Spark engine. You're spinning up something for data flows. It's more of a compute unit now that you're consuming. So I like this because it roughly rolls out to, for an F2, I would calculate like, I don't know, for one CU, it's like 0.005 of a penny or something, like something super small.
Yeah.
I mean, it costs something, but the nice part is because then you can go look at your jobs and say, okay, if that's my cost per job, how many CUs can I consume?
Right.
And then that tells me, oh, that's how much it cost me.
Yeah. So the big thing that, well, let me ask you, what do you think, just from an index point of view, which one was more costly and by how, what percent do you think?
Well, I'm going to give you a very weird proxy in how I measure these things. The time it takes to process the data will always cost more because the longer it takes, the more compute you need to use. So if you can do a job in, data flows, it will take less time in, if it takes less time in another process, like for example, you do a data flow, it takes a minute. If you can do it in a pipeline and it takes 30 seconds, it will cost you less because the pipeline ran faster. So anytime you can get things to run faster, it feels like it's a good proxy for less compute. Now, one thing that doesn't do is there is this concept of scale out or scaling up things. So even though you have less time running on a job in Databricks, you can run a really big cluster and it will have many, many computers running to do your job. And so that could cost more, even though it took less time. But again, as a rough proxy, I'd try and use time. So my impression is Dataflows is always slower than notebooks. It has been, and people have been kind of talking about it. So I would say the notebooks will be faster and less costly.
So it worked out to be 115% cheaper to use the notebook than the Dataflow Gen 2.
No way.
Mm-hmm. That doesn't surprise me.
And obviously,
wow, you know, Dataflows must have a lot of overhead when it runs.
And again, this was, I don't think by no means like a 3 month like kind of cost, yeah, but
sure.
And then it was looking at the CUs that were consumed for each of the workloads.
Wow.
The notebook consumed 340% less than the Dataflows.
Okay. So, and that makes sense, right? The CUs used for that same data flow to crunch that data was, I think you said like 1,000. And then the same CUs used in the Spark notebook was 300, which
exactly
right there, you're looking at roughly a 4X cost savings just because this is going to push people to start learning notebooks, honestly.
Oh, yeah. So,
wow.
Yeah, basically from those point of use, if you obviously don't know Python, is a little harder. And you and I have had this conversation a lot lately about where
does it's a new skill set that it's not easily learned right away. You have to study code to make it to be comfortable in a notebook.
Well, it's not just that. It's like you have this whole graphical user interface and it's always been part of Power BI. But mm-hmm. I mean, I've been realizing more and more too, now that everything's integrating with Fabric too, it's really incredible what one notebook can do. It's just much easier, I think, in Power Query if you're like, see how everything's looking. But I mean, it's pretty insane. Just looking at the hourly costs and what he did. So the link I just sent to you.
Yeah.
So
I'll put it out there. Yeah. But so great article, highly worth a read. And I love the stuff that Gilbert does. Gilbert is an amazing writer. He's prolific. He pumps out a lot of articles on his, mm-hmm. on his blog site. So he doesn't do a ton of videos, but he does a ton of blog content.
Right.
And from my understanding, Gilbert works on a lot of really large data models, like things that are in like close to like the 80, 90, 100 gigabyte level size data models. So his expertise at working with these really large, I mean, if he wants to refresh a data set, he's looking at like a day of refreshing data only. It's like a 24-hour exercise to refresh just the data. Holy smokes, that's a crazy amount of information going on in there. So anyways, here's the article. I put it here below. Looking through Formu and talking through Dataflows Gen 2 notebooks and costs. So that is a great article, Tommy. That's a really good find, Tommy. I'm glad you found this one and brought this up.
Yeah. When I wasn't sleeping this morning, because like I said, it came out today. So
yeah.
That's how you do this all. Okay. So while I'm resting,
yes,
you are up because you can't sleep and you're finding all this cool stuff. Well, I appreciate that, Tommy. I'm sure everybody in our audience does too.
Yeah. I will say this too, of the experiences that I'm using of Fabric, I'm liking more and more. I mean, I'll say it. I like the idea of being able to run pipelines. Pipeline seems to be fairly reliable for me and work pretty smoothly so far in Fabric. Dataflows Gen 2 was a little bumpy at the beginning, but it has gotten a lot better, I feel like, and the improvements have been smooth and it runs well. So recently, I've been having no problems with Dataflows Gen 2. The Spark notebook experience is awesome. I just wish there would be a bit more. I mean, if I think about what Power Query can do with all the transforms and removing columns, a lot of those things can already be done in Python notebooks. I mean, a lot of the transforms are there that you could just do it. And when you use Data Wrangler, you can do a lot of those transforms using a UI right in Data Wrangler. So I have to imagine it couldn't be super far of a stretch for you to use. Like, why don't they let you use like the Power Query experience to build a notebook?
That should be easy to convert.
Right? I mean, I don't know. I mean, if it feels to me like this would be something that should be close, or hey, I'm going to produce a data flow. Do I want to run it on the regular data flow engine, or do I want to translate it into like a Spark notebook and have it run there? Like, there should be some kind of, it feels like a lot of the functions and buttons you have could be easily translated into what Python could do. So anyways, that feels like it should be a thing at some point. We'll see if it actually gets there. Anyways, Seth, I think you said you had another news article too.
I don't have a news article, but I do have an announcement.
Oh, yeah, let's hear it.
So for those of you who joined us in our last episode, I got a little animated because we've been talking a lot about the Microsoft documentation around strategy and planning, et cetera, mm-hmm. right? Which I love doing, right?
Love doing.
Strategy, planning, and... Within there, there are some definitions that were used in the technical documentation that were causing me cognitive dissonance around OKRs and OGSMs. Anyway, sure. I might have gone off the handle a little bit. I'll dive more into this in our next episode as we dive into it. But suffice to say, the owner of that documentation reached out to me yesterday. Uh-oh. And apparently liked the ideas that I was sharing. And already got approval and made fixes in the technical documentation.
What?
And I swear, when I looked this morning, it's almost all like talking about OKRs.
Oh, what? Yay! So, wow.
So several thoughts here.
Okay. All right. Good.
The squeaky wheel sometimes does get attention. When
you weren't squeaking, I think you were more like yelling at the microphone.
Come on. Let's go. When you have a good argument.
Yeah.
And then the follow up to that was actually one that I did want to convey, because it kind of ish falls into this realm, that I think one of the biggest elevators in, I think, anybody's career, but even in mine, I always have said it's consulting. And that was because I thought I had the opportunity to, you know, get in and see all of the similar same problems within businesses. But I'm also beginning to realize, I think it's because it made me look at those businesses in and care about solving the core problems that they were bringing me into. And now taking that further into working for an organization, I think what I wanted to convey is one of the biggest career shifts that I think people can do is figuring out, how do you engage in solving the bigger business problems with the work that you can do? And don't be shy about pointing things out or trying to make sense, or in nice, gentle ways, causing issues that are things that the organizations need to think. And that, I think, alone sets you apart in just being somebody who executes on a job versus somebody who, you know, gets put on a career path, or, you know, good things happen kind of thing, or more mm-hmm. doors open when you start doing. So that being said, the guy responsible for this, ironically enough, and this wasn't planned, is Kurt Bueller. So if you don't know Kurt, he's got his own website, Data Goblins.
Awesome, he's by the way.
Twitter, LinkedIn, just Kurt Bueller. We're talking about another article today that he wrote on Tabular Editor. But a huge thanks for him, not only for listening to the podcast and listening to my rant, but reading between the lines and seeing some value there and already making some, what I think are fantastic changes to the documentation.
Wow.
I'm already seeing it. It's kind of funny you brought that up, because I actually took the liberty of, I'm like, I wonder how many discrepancies, because I've been thinking the same thing. So I have a note LM by Google, which is basically like document retrieval. And I've been asking it like, hey, what discrepancies do you see in these documentation between goals and objectives? And it basically outlined where it said an objective, where it said goal, and the definitions. I was going to bring that up once I put that more together, but it's already fixed in 2 days.
I don't have to.
Well, anyway, let me be clear.
That's pretty crazy.
Let me be clear. I mean, I love the fact that the alignment of the terminology is, I'm aligning a bit more with the OGSMs or OKRs. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. And having the same language across what you communicate in the adoption roadmap should match what you see inside the tactical planning piece. I will say, regardless of what you call a goal or a objective, what stands true is the concepts of what he's talking through in the article were 100% spot on.
Yep.
Maybe the terminology was slightly off in our minds, but like, it's solid. Like, This is great. I mean, the fact that Microsoft is putting out this kind of level of detail and documentation around how to get into Power BI, because I think a lot of times organizations look at Power BI and say, oh, it's just a reporting tool. Oh, it's just this very high level thing. And I think what this is, these articles are illuminating to me is this is a much deeper program. It does way more than just build reports. It does way more than creating a paging report where you can dump data out or send out automated emails of reporting. This is a full semantic modeling ecosystem. It has full data engineering capabilities. It's enterprise grade. You can use it for everything in your company. Why not? You should use it for all your data things because it is capable enough to do a lot of big projects. Anyways, really, really like this. Awesome news on that one, Seth. That's pretty cool. I have one minor news announcement here, and then we'll jump right into our topic. So if you have noticed, I believe the Power BI team is beginning to wake back up. And what I mean by that is yesterday I logged coming into out
of the winter hibernation.
They're coming out of winter hibernation from the December break. There must have been some code laying around at the end of December, or maybe some people were working on some things in early January. I have noticed two minor updates with Power BI Desktop in the month of January. So typically we don't get a big announcement of like, here's new features in January. Honestly, we very rarely get any updates for Power BI in January at all. But I've seen two come through. And the second one just happened on, I think, the 22nd of January, where I opened Power BI Desktop and it notified me. It said, hey, there's a new version of Desktop. You should go download it. So I think they're doing minor bug fixes and things as well. So just be aware, if you're using Power BI Desktop or you're going to use your desktop, open it up, check your version, go out to the website, check the version there on powerbi.com, and you may find there's a couple improvements to Desktop. I can't find anything in the code or looking at it. I don't see anything visibly different. I'm guessing they're just kind of cleaning up some other things behind the scenes. So anyways, just wanted to point that out. Yeah. There was two more updates this month, and we're greatly anticipating a good revision, you know, a good update in February. So I'm very excited to see February's update. I love all the kind of new features coming out. It excites me. So I'm excited for them to get back into the routine of things. So
excited. I'm excited about new things.
It's a game changer.
Sweet.
Excellent. Well, with that, let's jump over to our main article today. So our main article today is, again, from the one, the only, the Kurt Buehler. He is Mr. Knowledgeable. Either Kurt is either really, really smart, or he really knows how to use ChatGPT because he's producing so much content these days. It's crazy.
No, I think he's much more nefarious. I think that he's writing articles all over the place so that we don't know it's him and we don't like look at the author first. And we're just like, man, this is another great article. This is a completely different website. It's not just Data Goblin. It's like, and then we get into it. We're like,
wait a minute. Kurt. I agree with that one. So this one comes from, and again, appropriately named here, right? It's coming from Tabular Editor. This is a great talking point. How can you effectively gather requirements? What questions should you ask about your data model? How do you wireframe things? And how can you make one in Tabular Editor? So some really good talking points here. Let's jump into the article and kind of react and or get through some of this. Tommy, you want to give us kind of a bit of a summary or some key points here you want to kick off with inside this article?
I think it's first, when you think about it, it's really nothing terribly new. And I was actually just talking, doing a training last week, and which is like the fundamentals of data modeling. I'm like, here's the crazy thing. Everything I'm telling you today about best practice around star schemas and relationships, this is going to hold true whether you have five rows or you have 50 million. This is not like we're going to learn some very basic thing, but there's another way to do it better, like down the road. When we first start building models, we're already in the right mindset. Obviously, there's more complex situations, but the same idea still applies. And I've seen that from my own career journey working with others. Mark Russell's like, "How's your data model? How's your data model?" And it's following that same structure. So, getting that right is probably the skill. Not so much, I think, in more doing the data model. It's how can we translate whatever the situation is into an effective data model? That is where I think the skill really comes into play in taking your experience. But our framework of putting together a semantic model, putting together in a structure. Again, this is not like going from Power Query to Python. Mm-hmm. Now that we're more advanced, if you use Tableau Editor, if you don't, you're just really accomplishing the same thing, and really should look the same too.
Yeah, I like this. And a lot of times when I use the analogy of like building a report and or semantic model, I use the analogy of like building a bridge. We're building a bridge from the report side. Like, what does the report need to do to the end user? What kind of data do you care about? When you walk away from this report, what are the expected actions we expect you to do or go talk to? Or what happens after you look at the information? A lot of times I have people ask for reports and like, what's the actions? I don't know. I just need a table. Okay, tell me more about why the table. Well, I need to export it. Okay, well, why do you want to export it? Because I have all this other work outside of Power BI that I need to go. Okay, tell me why you're doing that extra work. Like, where's that? Why are you taking a dump of data and running away somewhere else to do a bunch of analysis to get to it? Tell me why that analysis is important. Let's talk about that and bring that forward potentially, because that's really the value add is to bring in a report in front of you that gives you the answers you need. So, you're building that report side from one half of it. And then the other side is you have to find the data and make sure that the data can actually speak or support what the report needs. And I find a lot of times people don't do enough work on the data engineering side, and therefore their DAX gets very complicated. It's overly complex. It slows down the model. We have tables that are not designed very well. And so what we wind up doing is spending more time data engineering because we didn't have good requirements around how does the data coming to us, because I don't know about you guys, but every project I've ever been in, anytime someone gives me a data source, it's never in the right format. It's not made for semantic models. It's just not. It needs to be shaped differently. So I'm always reshaping data and thinking about what are the dimensions? What do I care about? You know, hey, I've got this table that's joining to a fact table and it has a high cardinality join. Well, that slows things down. So I can't have that. So what can we do to simplify that? Is there any way, can I break that apart into more dimension tables? Do we need all these dimensions in this product? So there's a lot of other elements here that you can finesse inside the models to meet people's needs. Seth, what are some of your initial reactions? Any kind of initial reaction? You want to go through the article like in sequence, or do you want to kind of just pick out a couple key things that you like? What are your thoughts?
I think my thought is this is one once again a big topic, and you always know that right off the bat when the first paragraph or whatever includes links to other things that
supporting documentation
also support the article that we're talking about. And I would just say we probably will gloss over sections because it appears that every Kurt article requires or could require multiple episodes of the show, and he's already got Tuesday for a while, so we can't do it again. So links on links of other great things, I would say people don't gloss over that, like dive into those areas that kind of give some background to the approach of gathering requirements. Mm-hmm. We've also talked about data models themselves in episode 231. So this is kind of like dovetail onto there as well. But I think you make a really good point, and I don't want to move past what rides the line maybe in the article here is the business side. One of the biggest warning signs to me is exactly what Mike, you just described. When engineers are already building models and they're going down and building a specific visual and they're building calculations, and somebody who isn't really in the weeds comes in and says, hey, asks a business question, right? Like, hey, how are we handling this requirement, or what do we think we're going to do here? When the answer is always the technical one and not the high level one, I get worried. And then I try to back up the conversation. Okay, what problem are we trying to solve?
Yes.
What is the specific area? How does that tie into the overall, you know, report and what it is we're doing? And when people can't articulate that, that's a problem.
Yeah.
But that's also why we go through all these business steps. So as engineers, as developers, don't just zoom through this stuff. It's where we lock in our heads the high level, easy speak that we should be conveying to the business, but also contains really important information. Mm-hmm. So when you're down in the visual, and it's like, well, this wasn't originally in the spec. Like, why do we think we're doing this? the answer I would hope to hear is, well, this page is designed to solve, like, to answer these questions. And as I was going through here, I found this bit of data that I think really enhances that. So what I wanted to do is incorporate that, because on the output for the end, you know, like that kind of speak, because it means you're engaged in solving the problem, not just building something technically. And that's where I think engineers get wrapped around the axle is, without that clear understanding, we're ready to go. Yep, it's a data set. I'm going to pull it in. We're going to build these data. I got a model, and bam, I'm going to build this report.
Yes.
The meaning behind what we're doing is all encapsulated in this first part where we're gathering, talking to the business, gathering the requirements, et cetera, et cetera. And I was going to wait till the end, but I'll interject it here because I think it makes the most sense.
Okay, do it.
I would interject in this, like, pushing forward a conceptual model, because the article way at the end jumps into more of the logical and physical implementation, which we have in Tabular Editor. And I think that jumps from, hey, we're having a business conversation, into, yep, we're right into the technical, like, logical technical, right? There has to be that, like, I love, ever since we started talking about it, I think it was 231, the idea of this conceptual model. It's, hey, business user, I'm going to use some terms that you're not familiar with. They're called fact and dimension. Yes. So when we start talking about that ad nauseum down the road, here's what they mean, right? Mm-hmm. And in a conceptual model, what I'm saying is, we're going to take sales data, right? Here's some like the areas of business you want to care about. And I'm going to call this is the fact, right? And over here, we're going to have a distinct list of salespeople. We're going to call that a dimension, right? So, like, the conceptual model is designed to bring everybody onto the same page.
Yes.
Right? Because ultimately, we have a business owner that is the one that we're serving up this solution to. So if they're not on the same page and they can't see the structure of, like, the bits of business logic that we want to apply and all these things, that's a key part of business, like, gathering requirements. And I think even more so when we're talking about models and its use, and we'll get into, like, the different areas. I think Kurt does a fantastic job breaking down, but I would just, like, interject in here the conceptual model that wraps or encapsulates these conversations is a fantastic thing to implement in whatever you're doing, wherever you can, because whenever, it's not always just one conversation with business, it's multiple. And if you can come back to the same visual diagram, right, with everybody, you never have to rehash things. You never have to remember things, or you weren't, you know, paying attention this one time in that meeting, et cetera, et cetera. Everybody has access to this thing that is like, here's what we're building, right? Like, we're solving a problem, and here's how we're going to do that with data.
I like that. I think to add to your point there as well, I think when we're using Power BI, I think there's actually maybe there's a lack of understanding. I think everyone thinks it has to be a Power BI report page, always.
Yeah.
And I think there's also the idea of, you know, we want to model data together such that multiple tables make sense and relate to each other. To your point, facts and dimensions. We want to explain this a bit more to the business, because a lot of times business shows up and says, I want this example report, and they have a pivot table, they have a graph, they have something built in Excel, and say, this is what I want, give me this. And we don't talk about those requirements, which, if you're thinking about, okay, I understand, let's talk about the data source, let's talk about the relationships of the data, now we can start saying, okay, well, you could actually just analyze and Excel this stuff. Oh, wow, I didn't know we could do that. Oh, well, if you need a table dump, or you're trying to get lots of columns together, well, that's a paginated report. Let me build the model, and you can pick whatever columns you want. You build your own things now. Now there is, inside a workspace, you can now do your explore your data, right? So you can do a little exploratory data where you just grab columns and measures and stick them together. It produces a table and maybe a visual for people to go look at, and then turn that into a report, and then you can download that. So I think there's a lot of other tools that we're not, potentially, we understand it as developers, but the audience who's trying to consume Power BI isn't thinking about, it should be paginated report, it should be a Power BI report, or it should be analyzed in Excel. They're just thinking, I need this table done and move on.
Yeah.
So I think there's a little bit of like an illumination experience here. And I think these questions get at those answers, right? How many models do you need to make? I mean, I think companies also get, or people who do this or do this for the first time think, I'm just going to make one mega model so I can manage one big thing. That works, but you have to also be very organized and careful with that mega model, because when you change the mega model, every report hanging off of it potentially could break. So maybe there are two models. And I mean, I think a handful of well-architected models solves a many questions inside the business. I mean, I don't think you need 100 of them, but I think 4 or 5 designs of models does a really good job of answering a lot of business questions across the company.
That is an interesting question. So a question to pose to you and Tommy and chat, right? There are many different solutions we can implement now.
Yes.
Are the days of the giant data warehouse gone? Not like it's not relevant anymore, but it was always the North Star solution, right? Like the mythical thing was the giant data warehouse, and like organizations want to move towards that thing, that model that just encapsulated everything.
Great question.
Has that shifted now? In your experience, or what you're hearing, or like how you're implementing?
No, what I'm hearing, no, I think you're right that we're going to shift that way. I don't think that's still the conceptual idea yet for a lot of organizations. But no, what you're saying to me is like, yeah, if I was a betting man, that's where we're going. But to me, this is like our conversations around, we know how slow companies are to adapt to whatever the best practice is. I don't think they even know, like this whole idea is still a Power BI, still even new to a lot of people. And when we had this conversation with them, I was going to bring up the idea of just bringing the requirements is usually a good exercise for the business.
Can you table the direction you're going to go?
Yeah.
I want to lean into like this question and the answer, because it's not really that direction.
So I will say, is there, and I think that Donald is actually asking a very good question here. Did anyone ever really build the right giant Immin style data warehouse? Is that still around? I still think there is. I think the flexibility of that warehouse has changed, right? When that warehouse had to be built entirely inside SQL, entirely on on-prem machines, and we hadn't had enough scale to support all the reporting, I think there had to be a lot of very clear financial justification to say, what are you building, right? So I think the warehouse, or the giant warehouse of information, is going to still exist. Instead of calling it a warehouse now, where it's a single machine that's doing all of it, we're now talking about like there's now multiple lake houses. And if I think about, again, I'm kind of leaning on more of the Databricks version of this, right? When you say lake house in Databricks, it means all your storage accounts. It means all of your schemas or your catalogs or your storage accounts and all the curated Delta tables, everything you do in an organization, that is your warehouse. So it's more of a general terminology of, we have storage, we have compute, and we're putting it together. In the Power BI world, Microsoft has made an icon on your Power BI workspace that's called Lakehouse. I feel like we're not as true to a single warehouse where all the data goes. However, if we look at all the lakehouses collectively inside your organization and what you're building, yeah, you kind of are building a warehouse. And you want to have, how you organize that information now by quality of data, right? These are things coming from corporate. These are things coming from central BI that will be governed differently than other people creating their own little lakehouses on the side and doing what they need to do. So, does the warehouse still exist? Yes, absolutely. You need a place to collect data. You need a place to clean it, transform it, and shape it into what I think is happening now is when I was studying database design in my master's for data science, there was many different diagrams of how you wanted to build an architecture. You could have this monolithic warehouse and then have everyone looking at that monolithic warehouse. Or you could have a warehouse and you're building these little data marts on the side to point at tables that came from the warehouse, but you're building mini topical information. Like this is the financial data. This is the sales data. This is the operational data. So I feel like what's happening is the way Microsoft is building this, we have this storage and compute layer called the warehouse, which is Lakes and Spark and data flows and pipelines. That is acting as if it's the warehouse. And now what we're doing is we're building a bunch of Tabular models that are acting like little data marts for teams or topics or governed or not governed pieces of data. So, I mean, it's kind of like a hub and spoke approach. You need the warehouse to collect all the data, raw, transform it, clean it. And then you're building these spokes off of that that are the semantic models that actually serve the reporting pieces and keep that fast. So that's kind of my picture of it. So I don't know if that answered your question directly, Seth. Is that your view too?
I think it does. Well, I think what we're doing is we're there was the thing called the data warehouse, right? Which was structured transactional data.
It was a thing, like, single
and,
thing.
And it was database driven, right?
Because 100%.
That's where the technology lied. And I think even based on the descriptions and what I'm seeing in chat, like the concepts have not changed.
No, and exactly.
Technologies have.
Yes.
And I think where this is interesting when we start talking about how many models, right? These are structures of the data warehouse concepts that are being applied typically in areas, especially with larger data sets, where we've amalgamated or brought together the data lake, right? Mm-hmm. A storage place where we can store any sort of data.
Yes.
With the transactional nature of the data warehouse that was required to break out and use things we could interact with in table form to reshape into dimensions and facts, which we still use in semantic models.
Mm-hmm.
The power behind all that is delta tables, right? Like ultimately this unstructured storage using, you know, compute to get the same or very similar outcomes that we got with traditional databases. So I think the interest point for me in asking the question is we've already evolved to using new technologies. There is complexity though with going after a very large model because there's a lot more involved in not breaking things as you go along. And I think what'll be interesting to me is as we build out the bigger and bigger models, if these new technologies also offer up different ways for that to be easier to interact with, where engineering groups can make changes faster, because like I have seen the data warehouse in large form in a database environment, and it would be, if you wanted a new column somewhere to show up, it was like months.
Weeks of work.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And ultimately that becomes like you are no longer helping the business anymore.
Yeah.
You're hindering a lot of the things that they need to do. And I think Power BI in its connections, right, and ways in which we can merge and like connect to and add on additional data, even to just prove out value as a temporary solution while one is built, is one of the biggest benefits of using the Microsoft tool stack.
I like your analogy there because I feel like you're articulating something very relevant. The technology is enabling more nimble and hopefully quicker changes to the warehouse structure, basically. I think it's what I'm hearing you kind of say. And I really feel like that is good, but there's also this happy medium, I feel like, around even in the Power BI semantic model layer world, right? We can make changes fairly quickly. But as the importance of the data increases, as the eyes or number of users or consumers of that data increases, we may not be at months to add a new column to data sets and bring that in through all the store procedures and add the columns where it needs to be. I do think we are extending the time frame. It's not going from days anymore. You're now taking a bit more time and rigor to build that pipeline and making sure you test things appropriately. One topic that's not in here yet, but we'll probably have more talks about this in the future, is the idea or concept of data ops. I think with faster changes inside your semantic layers and your warehouses, we need a better, more automated way of checking when we make changes and making sure the data did not drift or change in an unexpected way. But that's another whole topic. Yeah, Kurt has a little data ops icon. Yes, I think data ops is an underrated topic, and there's some people talking about it today. I think there's going to need to be more tooling supported, either from Microsoft or people are going to build some things to make this easier for people to consume. Anyways, back to the article.
Back, Tommy, go ahead. With your point. Go ahead. Sorry, I just wanted to have that segue.
Yeah, go ahead.
Before moving on into the other.
Because I'm actually glad, guys, because you guys just had the most Power BI tech, like data engineering consultant talk I've heard.
this free hour of consulting brought to you by Seth and Mike.
We need a data model. I think we need a semantic model too. It needs to be built. Yeah, like, and that's all the knowledge we know, we have, we've seen. That's where we live. But I think even just going back to the article, forgetting data warehouse, what I've usually seen, especially from getting the requirements, is you guys are way up where the infrastructure is. I'm talking to people who have no idea how they're even defining it still. And that's always the battle. And I think Fabric's going to help with that. But when we're talking about the models that we need, the data sources, that is, you guys know this too. There's that discovery like, well, we always tracked it this way, or that maybe there's ill definitions. Or how all that's usually happening can usually raise a lot of questions. If you are asking the right questions, I usually find that you are beginning to shine light in some process or, a system that was not working and it never was working. And that's part of sometimes the most favorite thing I do, even though I usually don't get the credit for it, but it just shines the light where it's like, to what was not actually being tracked properly, if it's going to work now. Warehouse and where we're moving, great, but we gotta get to this point now where there's still a lot of stuff in the basement that organizations have just kept.
I 100% will agree with you, Tommy. And there hasn't been a single project I've ever been on where we get requirements, we do some data modeling, we produce some reports, and some portion of the data is junk. And better reporting shines the light into the dark spaces of your data warehouse and shows weaknesses where you didn't realize they were there before. Always. Every project, there's been more conversation around this. And this is why I like the questions about halfway down the article talking about questions about the underlying data. I think these are great. Like, is there any special security or compliance you need to talk about? What are the data sets? That'll bite you. You know what? We've been just throwing we want all the customer data in the customer dimension table. You know,
we can't have their social security numbers in there. Why not?
You can't put phone numbers in there, please. Like, they're like, no, we need it all. I'm like, no, you don't. And that's a security risk. Like, you can't do like, but we've been doing it for you. That's wrong. Like, you can't do that.
I'm not going to blast my mortgage company online right now, but I should.
So that's one thing there, right? And then, you know, what data sources do you use? How do you connect to them? How do you use them? Like, these are a lot of good show me how type questions. Mm-hmm. And it really helps that conversation of like, okay, where do we get this data from? What's the pattern here? What are your naming conventions?
This is a day just to get through these five questions.
Oh, 100%. You're lucky. I mean, even just naming conventions.
What data sources do you need to connect to and use? Well, this is the data source. Okay, what tables? These.
All of them.
Oh, let's open this table. Why are there 250 columns in here?
Yes.
Welcome to CRM.
Yes, exactly right. And then, you know, the naming conventions are great because I've had multiple organizations use the same term, like Tom, you've talked about this extensively. Mm-hmm. It's the same term used by different people, like seven different ways. Well, we call it this and we filter out these records. Oh, we call it the same thing, but we do it this way and we call it the same. Okay, I understand that you're trying to say the same term, but yeah, standard margin. Tell me what standard margin is, right? That's one of those.
What's your keyword you always say? Stay away from. It's a finance thing.
Oh, it is
Because I heard it recently.
Reallocate.
I was like,
warning bells. No. Pew. There's problems here. When you say reallocate, I know that that is going to be a lot of problems, and your reallocation of things is data doesn't conform to what you want to report on. That's throwing warning bells for me. But it's that kind of stuff, because I'm more than happy to build you four measures that calculates it four different ways. Totally okay with that. You just need to give me, you know, it's standard margin for sales, standard margin for, you know, excluding this, right? I'm totally fine having that calculation in there and adding what you need for it to be described correctly, but we must define a new term for it, because the definition of that term is not consistent across team members. Oh, like, yes, exactly. And Donald, to your point, yes, let a thousand measures bloom from this conversation, because that's what will happen. And hopefully you can get some alignment, right? Maybe you can get people to actually align on the same terminology on things and define things the same way. Yeah, data cataloging is a lost art. The other one here I like is, what freshness of data do you need? How fresh should the data become? Tommy, I think you've had this conversation too. They're like, yeah, we need it every hour. You realize the data warehouse that you're putting data into only refreshes once per day. So you're refreshing every hour, but we're only getting the source system to update once a day. So there's no reason for us to refresh multiple times. Let's just do one and go with it. Or I love the conversation
I need it live.
Yeah, I need
direct query. Exactly. I heard direct query we can do. It's like, maybe. It's possible. Do we really need it? How often are you using it? Every 15 minutes? No, like, well, maybe once a day.
Yeah, once a week I'm looking at it. Okay, so you probably don't need live then.
But I really need to see it right away.
And I love that conversation. Like, I asked the question, when you see the data, how long will it take you to make a decision based on that data that you see? Almost always the decision point of when I need to take action is longer than a day. Like, I can't see my sales number and immediately hire 10 new salespeople to go sell more stuff. That just doesn't happen. I can't look at my sales revenue and immediately in less than a couple hours go into Google Analytics and turn on a brand new campaign and have things funded and ready to go. Like, it takes some planning to get that stuff done. So in most cases, I would say in my worlds, almost 90% of the time, the data should just be refreshed once a day. It saves you money. And people are, well, how fast can we go? We need more of it.
Right.
Totally understand. But you realize you're adding cost. Every time you speed things up, you're adding more dollars, because in the cloud world, compute costs money, period. So let's really decide and my recent conversation has been, what is the dollar to value ratio of how fresh that data needs to be? There is a value in minimum once a day, but if you turn that up to 5, 10, 15 times a day, are you willing to spend the extra money to make that more fresh?
Yeah.
Does that make sense? And I would argue maybe 2 or 3 times a day is relevant, but if you're not taking action on that quickly enough, then it probably doesn't make sense.
Another good point that is made right above that, and also influences self-service versus enterprise or centralized, mm-hmm. is naming conventions, right? You're going to have to do a lot more work if it's self-service to make sure that people that are interacting with that model and building their own things, that the model makes sense. Mm-hmm. So love those points. If I was going to point out the big warning, not warning, but great parts of the article, it's this big warning section. And my comment, as I was typing it, I'm like, this is gold, and it's a gold color.
Yeah.
If you're going to read one part in here, as far as the data model part though, this is fantastic, because it says, if possible, already during the requirements gathering stage, try to connect to and view data you'll use for the semantic model. Profiling data for completeness, quality, and shape can help eliminate assumptions and identify issues before development, saving time.
Totally.
This is that
huge.
Yes. Understand what you're pulling in first. Have those conversations with business. Figure out what the gaps are before you just assume everything's complete. Because I guarantee if it's not managed by an enterprise team or an IT team, you have data problems.
Fix 100%.
Those or identify them first so that those are already part of an expected work stream fix and you can keep going, or it's a hard blocker until you fix it, because oh my goodness, the amount of wasted time down the road of like, things aren't tying out. Why aren't they tying out? Well, I don't know. Let's go walk back through the pipeline and figure out all these transformations.
Yeah, like, totally.
Oh, it's the core table. So yeah. A lot of great questions in there to like suss that out.
Don't underestimate the value of going to the source and testing the data. But that's why Fabric exists. Like, connect to it, you know, do some quality metrics on top of it. Like, that's so helpful to people to figure out what's going on in there. And the amount of business users that assume the data is correct and right out of the box, is probably much higher than you think. And then when you say, they're like, oh yeah, the data should just join together, no problem. Take this table, that table, join all the things, it should be fine. And when you go in, you're like, well, there's no match. There's no key column.
Yeah.
How do you join the data together? Like, well, we don't know. Well, you're not capturing it correctly, so you can join the data back. Yeah. Anyways.
And this is the change. I just want to quickly, because
I was going to go into final thoughts here, Tommy.
It's already been an hour, but Seth, your point about just like from the data warehouse, where are we shifting? Where are we going? This is the change.
Yes.
Is that now that ability to, oh my gosh, that we can quickly do those tests and begin not just to connect everything, but how we can store it in Fabric. This is where we're going to shift. And I think once we get more organizations begin to really understand that, how much more accessible their data is, that's going to be the shift where, to your point, where the data warehouse is going to kind of lose its place where it is now.
Data warehouse is a concept I don't think goes anywhere. But I will say this. We're not going to tell you everything about the article. Even after this, Kurt walks through, like, how do you set this up in Tabular Editor?
Yep.
Go check out the article for yourself. Great. To see how Solid. It ends, because mm-hmm. we ran out of time.
Dun, dun, dun. You know, it's kind of like the ending. The suspenseful ending. Insert right. here. All right. With that, I really appreciate everyone's listenership. Let's just do some quick final thoughts and we'll wrap here. Tommy, final thought.
I think we need to do a better job of actually going through an entire article, or maybe we just have a lot more to talk about. But no, the
2-hour podcast coming up next week.
The other podcast. So no, but I think, but it just goes to show all the other items in here. We didn't have to talk about a wireframe today. We didn't have to go through some of the schema information. While it's important, but we've understood this, we've lived this, and I think a lot of people here have lived this too. And it just goes back to that idea of how well can you talk about the business and listen to them.
Like that. Seth, any final thoughts for you?
I was stymied for, like, hey, we tell you about great things. Sometimes we give you your opinion. Go read from the guy who put all the effort into putting this article together. And Kurt did another fantastic job. Well worth diving into. It's a great conversation, thinking about the business problem. The structure of the thing that's going to support that is what this article does a fantastic job in doing. And it gives you the methods by which you can go create some fantastic semantic models. So give it a check out. It's really important as the structure for everything that we're developing from the reporting standpoint. Another job well done.
My final thought here is these are a lot of skills that have been learned over time and by doing this over and over again. I recommend, if you don't have someone who's doing this in your organization today currently, read through this article, try and learn some of these skills. These questions are relevant. If you don't have someone doing this in your organization, it's really good to go grab someone from somewhere. Go get someone who's a consultant, someone who's done this before. Bring in experts and learn from them how to do this process, because this is not, it's not as straightforward as just saying, build a report. There's more to it. So I think this is a learned skill. It's definitely achievable by anyone building Power BI models or anyone who's doing data modeling. But this is a great skill set to know and acknowledge. And I think I think data is going to be pretty recession-proof, knock on wood here. But having these kind of skills and being able to talk to the business and build data models will be very relevant. With that, thank you all very much. We appreciate your time. We only ask that you would share this podcast if you liked it. If you like this article, please share it on social media or let someone else know at work that you've enjoyed this topic. We'd love for you to like and subscribe and or share this out to anyone else. Tommy, where else can you find the podcast?
You can find us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Be sure to subscribe and leave a rating. It helps out a ton. If you have a question, idea, or a topic that you want us to talk about in a future episode, head over to PowerBI Tips/podcast. Leave your name and a great question. And finally, join us live for now, Tuesdays and Thursdays, and join us on all the Power BI Tips social media channels.
What are you implying? That we need more episodes per week?
I think so.
Oh, boy. I'm going to be perpetually on a podcast. All right. Thank you all very much. We'll see you next time.